Hello, this is Dave Bunnell, and we're beginning the next part of our series in the study of the book of Daniel. We'll be looking at Daniel chapter 3 in the Old Testament book today. We're going through the entire book, Lord willing, and the recordings of the first couple of chapters' lessons are available from the same source that you got this one, most likely, if you have missed those and want to hear them, or you can just listen to this one as it is. Daniel chapter 3 is what we're looking at today. And we're going to find that when you live your life in faithfulness to God, God shows His faithfulness to you, and God's going to use your witness and your testimony to cause others to be able to stand strong. Daniel has three friends that we've looked at along with him in Daniel chapter 1, as he's led them to take a stand for God, and God has been faithful to them. And then Daniel chapter 2, he again led them in faithfulness to God, and God was faithful to them and raised them up. And now in Daniel chapter 3, those three friends that Daniel's had an effect on are going to be in the story, and for whatever reason, Daniel's not in this story. He wasn't there, but they were strengthened and able to stand. And what we're going to also look at is how it relates to our lives, that we're going to fear and obey some God. So we need to choose the right God to fear and obey. Because there's only one God that's worthy of that, and one God that can come through for us if we do that. Let's look in Daniel chapter 3. I'll begin reading in verse 1. It says, King Nebuchadnezzar made a gold statue, 90 feet high and 9 feet wide. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to assemble the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the rulers of the provinces to attend the dedication of the statue King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the rulers of the provinces assembled for the dedication of the statue the king had set up. Then they stood before the statue Nebuchadnezzar had set up. A herald loudly proclaimed, "People of every nation and language, you are commanded, when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, drum, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the gold statue that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. But whoever does not fall down and worship will be immediately thrown into a furnace of blazing fire." Therefore, when all the people heard the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and every kind of music, people of every nation and language fell down and worshipped the gold statue that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. You know, as I said in my introduction, you're going to fear and worship some God. You're going to fear and worship something. You're going to fear and obey something in this life. The world system in the world we live in is going to demand that you fear and obey them and their gods. And they may threaten you to get you to do it. We really have no reason to believe that all of these people from all of these nations believed that this statue Nebuchadnezzar had set up was a powerful God worthy of worship. It's just not likely that it was in their hearts to honor that God, that statue, and bow down to it spontaneously. They had to be summoned to do it by the music. They had to be persuaded to do it by the threat of death, by burning in the flames. And that's why they did it. It says, therefore they did bow. That's not surprising. You know, if you don't have a relationship with the true and living God, then this world can scare you into doing anything it wants you to do. You can't really stand against wrong unless you're standing for right. Not effectively so, anyway. Because the forces of evil are stronger than you and I are in ourselves. And they're going to be able to force us to do what they want unless we're standing for the true and living God. Now, there are some people there in the land, though, that knew the true and living God. And they knew that He is the one to fear and to obey. They knew, for example, that the flames that He will throw those who worship other gods in this life into are hotter than the flames of this world. So they feared Him. They knew also that He was able to deliver from the flames, both of His flames in a burning hell and the flames of this world. So they feared and obeyed Him. They became very conspicuous in doing that. And they stood alone without their friend that had stood with them. We don't know. The book doesn't even tell us where Daniel was while this happened. I think we can be pretty confident that he didn't bow down to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar either. It would not have been like him to do that. And I think we can be sure that he didn't. But for whatever reason, he's not the one that gets caught. At least not first, as this happens. These three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that we're going to read about, they refuse to bow. And they become very conspicuous about that. Now, King Nebuchadnezzar has gathered together everybody of power and influence and said, and his herald say, you will bow to the God I have set up. You will worship my gods. You will serve and you will bow in worship of this statue I have set up as a means of, in effect, worshiping me. And all these people from all different nations that have all different gods come together, and they, from threat of flames, they bow. Now, you can understand that, can't you? You've been burned at least in minor ways before in your life, haven't you? A few months ago, I was working at a coffee lounge that we had set up for evangelizing students, and one day there was a furniture malfunction of sorts that the counters just fell over, and as I caught them to try to hold them up, a full pot of very hot coffee came crashing down, and some of it landed on my hand on its way down and burned a spot on the back of my hand about 3 inches long and left blisters there. And I can remember how badly that was hurting for a few hours, especially, just from having a little burn on one piece of my hand. Multiply that feeling to the whole body, and not just your surface flesh, but burning through and through. You can understand how people would be persuaded by that to worship even a false god, even one they didn't believe in. They would bow the knee to it if there was the threat of that. And all the peoples of all the nations, except for one, they bowed when they heard the music playing, because of that threat that they would be thrown into a furnace of burning fire. Now, that's understandable. It's kind of a picture of what's going to happen during the time of the tribulation period, when a new Babylon arises and a new Nebuchadnezzar of sorts comes and rules, and a statue is set up on his behalf, and people are commanded to take his mark and to worship him as God and to bow before him. And all the religions of the world are going to be consolidated. There's not going to be arguing between religions then. The threat of beheading is going to make all of them that don't follow the true and living God follow this one. That's what was happening on this day in Babylon. All of the people that followed all of their gods were willing to turn their backs on all of their gods to follow this one that was set up, because this one was going to throw them into the fire if they didn't. But the people of Israel understood the flames that the true and living God will throw false worshippers into are hotter. They feared him. They obeyed him. Verse 7. This says that they all bowed down to the statue King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then comes persecution immediately from those that are against the followers of the true and living God. Some Chaldeans, it says in verse 8, took this occasion to come forward and maliciously accuse the Jews. Now the Chaldeans, you remember them from chapter 2? They're the ones who were going to be put to death by Nebuchadnezzar because they couldn't tell Nebuchadnezzar his dream and its interpretation. And Daniel and the Jews step in and saved their lives by going to the true God and finding that information and bringing it to Nebuchadnezzar and persuading Nebuchadnezzar and his men to spare the Chaldeans. There's not any thankfulness there on the part of the Chaldeans toward the worshippers of the true and living God who proved himself in chapter 2 to be true. Instead, there's anger, there's jealousy, there's wrathfulness. You know, when God shows himself powerful in our lives, it's going to cause some to believe, and it's going to cause others to just be angry. Some people are going to respond to the message of the gospel with belief. Others are going to respond by becoming incensed with harsh opposition to what we preach. And that's what happens here. These Chaldeans use this as an opportunity to maliciously accuse the Jews. It says, they said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "May the king live forever. You, as king, issued a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and drum, and every kind of music must fall down and worship the gold statue. Whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a furnace of blazing fire. There are some Jews you have appointed to manage the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men have ignored you, the king. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold statue you have set up." You know, when we do righteous things, we don't necessarily do it to be seen by men if we have our heart in the right place, but if we take a stand for Christ, we can't expect to do it underground and not face any kind of opposition. Because there are enemies of God that are going to, quote-unquote, catch us in the act of doing the right thing. And they're going to falsely accuse us. On a smaller scale, I faced this several times in a job I once had when I was living in Pennsylvania, and I would stand for the true gospel of Jesus Christ. And more than once, people who were of another belief system were coming to my bosses who were of that same belief system and saying, "You've got to get rid of him. He's standing for all of this evangelical Christianity. He's doing this heresy that teaches we're saved by grace through faith alone. And you've got to get rid of him." I had 3 different bosses approached by various people saying that during a course of 8 years. God chose to protect my job. I left it on my terms when I left it, not on someone else's. But what if he hadn't? If I had lost my job because I took that stand for Christ, would I have needed to regret that? Would I have needed to say, "Whoops, I did the wrong thing by trusting in God"? No. The truth is, we should trust in God, even though it's going to bring opposition. It's going to bring opposition to you, too. If you share the gospel in your workplace, you're going to have people telling you to shut up. It's not appropriate to talk here about that. Anything else to talk about is fine, but not that. Just not that. As you're doing your work, you can talk about anything. But just not that. My wife was at a realtor's office in Texas the last time we were in the U.S., and she was witnessing to somebody, and the boss of the office came out and overheard and scolded her employee, saying, "You can't talk about that here. You got to stop that." And that'll happen to you too. If you're standing for the true and living God, you're going to have people telling you, shut up and bow to this system. Don't fear and obey your God. Fear and obey mine. That's what happens with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They come and they get accused of doing what they did do, refusing to worship these false gods. Verse 13, "Then in a furious rage, Nebuchadnezzar gave orders to bring in Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king. Nebuchadnezzar asked them, 'Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, is it true that you don't serve my gods or worship the statue I have set up? Now if you're ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and drum, and every kind of music, fall down and worship the statue I made. But if you don't worship it, you will be immediately thrown into a furnace of blazing fire. And who is the God who can rescue you from my power?'" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, "Nebuchadnezzar, we don't need to give you an answer to this question. The God we serve can rescue us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he can rescue us from the power of you, the king. But even if he does not rescue us, we want you as king to know that we will not serve your gods or worship the gold statue you set up." There it is. They know and believe that God can save them. Their God can save them from Babylon's gods and kings. They also know he might not. You know, sometimes God does let his people die for him. They knew he might not save them. We know the end of the story already. But put yourself at that point of the story, of not knowing yet. They didn't know. God actually didn't tell them, "Stand strong, I'll save you from the flames." He didn't tell them that. They knew he could rescue them, but they knew he might not. And they believed that if it was God's will for them to burn in those flames, and they were willing to let that happen. They were willing to defy this world's kings and gods to follow their true God. They knew he was worthy not just of standing for him, but of dying for him, if that's what came about. Do we have a faith strong enough to do that? What if, wherever you were, the enemies of God had power enough to do that? To come into your church, for example, with machine guns and other weapons, and lock the doors, and stand up at the front, and bring up the people one at a time, and say, "Bow down before us. Confess that Jesus is not Lord, and agree to follow whatever we tell you to do, and say your God is not your God. Anyone who doesn't do it gets a bullet in the head." Would we have the strength to stand? Well, if we're walking closely with God, we would have that strength from him. Even if he didn't tell us, "I'm going to deliver you today and save you from them." Because he didn't tell that to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's why they said, even if he doesn't rescue us, we will not bow. We will not serve your gods. We will not worship the statue you've set up. We want you to know that, king. You are king of this land. But we want you to know we will always disobey you. If you command us to worship false gods instead of the true and living God, we will disobey your order, even if our God lets you kill us for it. Even in the pain of the flames, we will not bow. This is, in part, Daniel's influence on them. Like I said, chapter 1, Daniel stood, they stood with him. Chapter 2, Daniel stood, they stood with him. Each time, God proving himself faithful, their faith growing in him. Now, wherever Daniel is, he wasn't the one caught and brought forward at this point. Eventually it would have happened to him too, I'm sure. But now Daniel's three friends that he's influenced stand alone. You live your life like Daniel does, standing strong for Christ, even in the face of opposition, and seeing God be faithful, then those people you disciple, those people you bring along with you to pray through those moments are going to have their faith strengthened. You go out and witness in places that it's hard to be a witness for Christ and bring them along with you as you pray, and then you'll be able to stand back and watch them do it without you, because they're strengthened by the same God you're strengthened by, and suddenly you realize they don't need you anymore. They can still stand without you there. And that's what Daniel's three friends are doing here. They stand without Daniel with their God. Well, Nebuchadnezzar doesn't take it well. We couldn't have expected him to. It says in verse 19, then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with rage, and the expression on his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He gave orders to heat the furnace 7 times more than was customary, and he commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the furnace of blazing fire. So these men in their trousers, robes, head coverings, and other clothes were tied up and thrown into the furnace of blazing fire. Since the king's command was so urgent and the furnace extremely hot, the raging flames killed those men who carried Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego up. The gods of Babylon did not provide protection from the flames of those who worshipped them. So that the ones that worshipped these false gods died in the cause of trying to kill the followers of the true and living God. These false gods didn't care and didn't have the power to protect their most ardent followers. That's the mark of a satanic system. You know, those who rise up against the true and living God have no protection. They have no safety. God, the real God, can sweep in and judge them at any moment. If, you know, I used the example of my job being threatened back in a job that I worked in some years ago. God did not protect some of those that came against me. One of the bosses that came against me, she got fired by the people that she was trying to have push me out. And that happened to members of the board of directors of the company too. Some of them got forced out when they tried to come against me for standing for Christ. There's no protection for the one that stands for the false system and against God. And the very things that they try to bring upon God's people can come upon them. When the false god Allah calls upon his people to kill the infidels, he does it in a way that requires them to die in the process, to be his martyrs, if they're going to honor him. Well, these men here who tied up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego become martyrs for Nebuchadnezzar's statue, because they, in the process of trying to execute what they thought was justice against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they died. These flames are so hot that you didn't have to get into the furnace to be killed by them. And the men that brought them up there to throw them in, they died. The flames were so hot that it killed these men that didn't even get into the furnace very quickly. It killed them. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are still alive. Verse 22, it all comes about. Since the king's command was so urgent and the furnace was extremely hot, the raging flames killed those men who carried Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego up. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the furnace of blazing fire. Then King Nebuchadnezzar jumped up in alarm. He said to his advisors, "Didn't we throw three men bound into the fire?" "Yes, of course, your majesty," they replied to the king. He exclaimed, "Look, I see four men, not tied, walking around in the fire unharmed, and the fourth looks like a son of the gods." The fire didn't burn anything except Nebuchadnezzar's ropes that they tied him up with. Everything else on their body is intact, including their body itself. And Nebuchadnezzar looks in and says, "I see four men." You see, the god Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego feared has come. He's present with them, and he's protecting them from the elements. The fire's not touching them. It's not even making them feel too hot for comfort. It burned the ropes off that they'd been tied in. And sometimes persecution will be used of God to do that in our lives too, in a more figurative sense. When the world tries to bind our message for Christ, sometimes the things they use to try to do that, God will use to burn those chains and binding ropes off of us and leave us free to proclaim Jesus with our lives. Even those that have died have been able to proclaim Jesus with their lives. On Friday afternoons in Iran, I'm told by some missionaries that go there, they will have their Sabbath executions by stoning of those that have come to faith in the Lord Jesus Christ and been baptized. And they'll show this on television as those who have offended Islam by becoming Christians and leaving Islam are being tossed into a pit and being killed by stoning, by being pelted with large rocks until they're dead. They'll show it on television in Iran. And while that happens, these believers in Christ will be witnessing. They can be heard over the television, talking to the people of their country, telling them how Jesus Christ is King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and how salvation is found in no other name but His. And the very thing that the enemy of our souls is trying to use to silence the message of Christ by killing them is being used by God to burn away those ropes that bind them, and give them, in their last moment on this earth, the freedom to declare before the whole country, Jesus is Lord, and glorify His name. We don't need to fear persecution because we serve a God that can turn the flames that this world turns on us into something that doesn't burn anything except the ropes that they bound us with, and leaves us strong as a testimony. King Nebuchadnezzar recognizes this now. He sees four men, not three. One of them a son of the gods. He may actually have been that, the son of God, there walking around with them, protecting them, or just an angel. We don't really know from the text how it came about, but whoever it was walking around in there, whether it was a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ or just one of His angels, God was honoring the men that honored him and protecting them for his glory. Verse 26, Nebuchadnezzar then approached the door of the furnace of blazing fire and called, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you servants of the Most High God, come out. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire. They stayed in there until the king that had them thrown in there gave them a summons to come out. They could have climbed out sooner if they wanted to, but they stayed in there and let him come and summon them out. The only dead bodies there being the ones of the executioners. And they come out out of the fire. Verse 27, when the satraps, prefects, governors, and the king's advisors gathered around, because everybody wants to see this, they saw that the fire had no effect on the bodies of the men. Here they come up, they're examining them, like, what happened here? The fire had no effect on the bodies of these men. Not a hair of their heads was singed. They're examining that closely, looking through their hair, looking through their clothes. It says their robes were unaffected, and there was no smell of fire on them. They're even coming up and sniffing them. Look at this. They don't even smell like they were in a fire. They're amazed at what was happening, how well protected they were. Verse 28, Nebuchadnezzar exclaimed, praise to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He sent his angels and rescued his servants who trusted in him. They violated the king's command and risked their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own. Therefore, I issue a decree that anyone of any people, nation, or language who says anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego will be torn limb from limb and his house made a garbage dump. For there is no other God who is able to deliver like this. This king is seeing that the God who had interpreted his dream in chapter 2, now completely delivered from his power. He's not just a God that's powerful and out there, but this king's realizing he's also a God that's powerful over me, and powerful over my gods, and powerful over the flames of fire. He had declared, who is the God who can deliver you from my hand? Now he knows the answer to that question. And he says, in chapter 2, after this God gave the interpretation of his dream, he praised this God. Now he goes a step further. He not only praises this God, but he demands that everybody in the kingdom show reverence for him and says a death penalty on anybody that says anything against this God. Is that a little convicting at this moment? When things go wrong, how easy is it for you to cry out against your God? Say, God's not hearing, God's not answering my prayers, God's not doing what I need him to do, God's messing up, he's not giving me what I need, he's not going to be there for me, he's not... How easy it can be for even those who are people of God to speak against him. And here this pagan king sees how powerful the God of the universe is, and he says, if I hear anybody say anything against this God, a death sentence on him. Have you in your walk with God been saying things that made you worthy of that death sentence of Nebuchadnezzar for dishonoring this God? If this pagan king can realize that our God is so good that anyone who speaks against him is worthy of death, how much more should we, who've been saved by this God and know him, make sure every word out of our mouths about God is a word of praise and blessing and trust and love, and not complaining and whining, and not speaking ill of this God. Verse 30, then the king rewarded Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. He found out who the true and living God was. because these three men had been so affected by Daniel's life that they stood for the true and living God when they were commanded to bow before another god or die. All the peoples of all the nations that had come to Babylon with all of their gods heard the music and they bowed. There's coming a time in the tribulation period when the Antichrist will demand that worship. And the worshippers of all the other gods of the world, the Hindu gods, the Buddhists, the Muslims, all of those are going to say, yes, we will bow. Many because they believe, and perhaps many others because they just fear the death that'll come to them if they don't believe. If they don't bow. But then there will be those that have come to faith in the Lord Jesus Christ since the rapture. And they will say, no, our God's able to deliver us from your hand, O Antichrist. But even though he might not, we want you to know that we will not serve you. We will not take your mark. We will not bow before your image. And in that case, many of them are going to die. Multitudes of them are going to die. But it will be an act that brings God honor. How much more, as we look to the past and see those that have faced martyrdom, or the possibility of it, as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did, and still stayed strong. As we look to the future, knowing these multitudes that will do that under the powerful kingdom of the Antichrist, as we look to the places in the world where our brothers and sisters, like in Iran, are doing that today, how much more should those of us who probably include everybody that's hearing this recording, who don't risk their lives, who risk so little to stand for Christ, how much more do we need to be trusting God to help us through? Everyone's going to fear and obey some God. But it's not the God of your boss or your neighbor or another religion or your teacher at school who's an atheist. It's not that God system that you need to fear and obey. It's the true and living God that you need to fear and obey, because he has the power to deliver you not just from the world's flames that they want to persecute you with, but the power to deliver you from the flames of hell, where all those who refuse to worship him will go one day. You can fear and obey him, and you can trust him. And even if he doesn't rescue you from the persecution that comes your way as a result, you can still know that you're in good hands when you're in his hands. He's a good God. Which God are you going to fear and obey? Fear and obey Daniel's God, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's God, your God that you've come to know through faith in Jesus Christ. Fear and obey no other God. Fear and obey the true God. And may he bless you as you go about your day today.